Hey everyone, I just wanted to say really quick, I have a new podcast that you can listen to if you want to. It's called The Level Up Pod, together with Murph, who some of you may know from Game Nights or the Command Zone podcast. We're just talking about the video games we own, the consoles we love, and why we love collecting. You can check it out anywhere where podcasts are found. Follow us at LevelUpPod_ on Twitter. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to the Herald's Horn. On this episode, we're talking about Pro Tour Outlaws of Thunder Junction, a brand new record for the highest sale price for a Magic card of all time, and also Modern Horizons 3 leaks. Of course, we have the Product Watch. We've got the co-host's notebook as well. After the break, I'm joined by Shivam of Casual Magic with Shivam Bot, and Shivam and Wheeler love Magic, amongst plenty of other Magic the Gathering content stuff that you would recognize. Of course, he is also a member of the Commander Advisory Group, telling the Rules Committee what they should unban. Never banning anything, though. Before we get into the episode, I did want to plug something of my own really quickly. At the time of publishing Thursday, yesterday, for TCGplayer.com, I got the chance to publish The Ultimate Guide to Dan Dan. I got to sit down and write down all of my thoughts about how you can design your own Dan Dan deck, what to think about, what kind of accesses you can work with, instants and sorceries, incentivizing combat, incentivizing stack play, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to leave the link in the podcast description. If you are interested in Dan Dan and want to learn more about the format, it would mean a lot to me if you checked out that article, because I put a lot of work into it. Per TCG Player's little reading estimation time, it's nearly a 30-minute read. So I will leave that link in the podcast description. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hello, you are listening to episode number 10 of the Herald's Horn. We made it. That's right. We're all the way here on episode 10 already. The future may as well be limitless. If I was going to quit by now, I would have quit by now, or I may quit immediately after this episode. We don't know yet. My name is Cal Jones. And today, once again, I am joined by the one, the only Dan, a.k.a. God's Plan, a.k.a. 12. What's up?
If I can introduce my own nickname, which I think is very against the code of doing so, I'm going to say it's Dan the Jacket MTG.
Dan the Jacket MTG? What's that mean?
That this is episode 10, and I've officially won the doing 10 episodes Herald's Horn jacket, as we talked about maybe in episode one. Actually, maybe it wasn't even on air. I think that might be something that I pulled from off air that you and I talked about privately. But now is show
you know,
lore.
You know, Dan, we may need to go back and find the absolute factual instance of the jacket being a reward for co-hosts.
Yeah, whoever's upkeeping the wiki, please take a look and figure out which episode that comes from.
All right, run the song. And welcome back. It's another two-host scenario here this week on the Herald's Horn, but luckily we have a lot of great stuff to talk about. Actually, I think it's going to be a pretty short episode this week, but you know what? Sometimes we just got to have those. Isn't that right, Dan?
I guess so, yeah. I don't think that not having a lot to talk about will keep us from talking a lot.
I don't know. I'm pretty motivated. I have a lot of Hades 2 to get to play in. I have some more articles to write. But we can talk about all of that later, I'm sure. First up, let's get into the news. Of course, the biggest news of the last 2 weeks, well, maybe not the biggest news, but the thing I was most excited about in the last 2 weeks was Pro Tour Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Dan and I talked about it a little tiny bit last week, kind of setting the stage. It was a short run-up, meaning that all these pros didn't have very long to practice Limited. They didn't have very long to practice whatever standard deck they might want to do. And I think this showed in the metagame results. The metagame results were incredibly varied. There was a lot of teams who brought like four of a deck. There was so many one-off archetypes. The most popular deck of the weekend was Esper, like Raffine-based mid-range, just trying to put in a bunch of good tempo-y cards into play, draw a ton of cards off of Raffine, usually. But I think it was agreed upon by a lot of professional players that Esper mid-range was not like the quote-unquote best deck. It was just the safest deck. I think a lot of people took the probably like correct route of instead focusing all of their time and preparation, focusing on limited, because limited is half of your Swiss record. You know, half of your Swiss games are standard, half of your Swiss games are draft. And if you can gain win percent in the draft while registering a safe pick for standard in Esper midrange, seems pretty safe to me. Dan, what was your approach in preparing for this Pro Tour?
My approach was that I spent a lot of time outside that weekend in the woods, and I was touching a lot of rocks and trees instead of watching the Pro Tour. And I said to myself, I will watch that later. And then I did not.
Whew. Dan, you know, that sounds like a pretty good way to live. I cannot lie.
It was great. I am continuing to do it. I was actually outside for like 2 hours before we recorded this today.
Nice. I really want to be outside today. I haven't been outside very much recently, but it is like downpouring here today, which kind of makes it hard to get out there. It was here in Ohio. It was a beautiful weekend on Pro Tour weekend. So I spent a lot of my time outside as well, you know, in the backyard cleaning up. My wife and I got like a greenhouse for free, like kind of a backyard greenhouse.
That's really
standalone
cool
thing. So we were setting that up. But I whenever I wasn't outside, you know, coming inside, smoker's running, gotta get out of the smoke for a second. I got to watch some of the Pro Tour. The coverage was awesome. Of course, Cedric is back to doing play-by-play, which I am
always a big fan of.
Yeah. Yep. Cedric is finally back in the booth after having worked I think he was in the booth for the last Pro Tour as well, but they've had him kind of on the news desk for a while, interviewing players. He was good in that role.
He's great no matter where he is, but I loved his commentary. And not to speak too highly of our direct competition in the podcasting world, but his voice is just beautiful. Could listen to him all day.
He's funny. He's smart. He really holds it all down. And of course, Riley was in the booth with him this weekend. I love Riley. Love the other commentary pair as well, especially Marshall. Always love listening to Marshall talk about limited gameplay. That's why I do it like 3 hours every week by listening to.
Yeah, just another like
competing podcast. Limited resources. Yeah, exactly. But it was a lot of fun. I got to watch a lot of the top eight on Sunday. Sunday didn't have a lot going on. There was a crazy five-game match to open up the semis. One of the players went up 2-0, and then the other player reverse swept them. The reverse sweeper, of course, was the eventual champion, Akawa, who was playing Domain Ramp. He got behind 2-0, but as soon as he got to bring in his rest in pieces out of his sideboard, his graveyard-based combo opponent had no more hope of winning that match, I don't think. But it was also awesome to see the finals. The finals was between two Japanese players. I feel like historically, Japan, the country, has not gotten like the wins and like top finishes in these huge Magic tournaments that they've been deserved. They have so many incredible players. They're usually bringing awesome off the wall stuff that nobody else even thinks of. And it was so awesome to me. Like I've been a big fan of most of the Japanese players for a long time now. It was awesome for me to see a finals between Akawa and, of course, Yuta Takahashi, who was playing Azorius Control, which I didn't know was a standard deck. Apparently, it's like an okay standard deck. But if Yuta Takahashi was going to be playing anything at the Pro Tour, it would be Azorius Control. And he was rewarded by taking it all the way to the finals. Of note, Akawa was also like the best player of the weekend. He lost one match for the entirety of Swiss.
Incredible record.
Yes, he lost. It was like he lost one Swiss match and then went on to just sweep the top eight as well. So one loss all weekend long. That's about as good as it gets, I think.
Yeah, incredible playing.
Yep. Exactly. Draft was a lot of fun. Outlaws of Thunder Junction draft. I know you've been a big fan, right?
Yeah. I continually just getting ground into the dust doing it. I've had a couple of like pretty successful runs, but it can be an unforgiving environment, but very, very fun. Very novel.
It was a lot of fun to watch that as well. I think that was the most interesting part of the Pro Tour to me, was getting to see these pros approach the format kind of almost a lot less familiarly than they would be. And I think it really helped kind of separate the people who get to prepare for the Pro Tour by like grinding all the things exactly they should know about the format into their brain, and therefore they can be successful. And then like the other pros who just kind of like get how limited works, can see behind the curtain, are great players of the game, are just great drafters. I think these kind of short turnarounds really just separate those players from the rest. And those players were all rewarded with like 6-0 records on the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of like very subtle complexities to OTJ Limited that I think can definitely separate the wheat from the chaff, as they say.
And would you call yourself the wheat or the chaff at this time?
Oh, don't look at my record. I'm definitely the wheat is the good one. The one you want to be, right? I don't remember.
That is correct. The wheat is the good. You don't want the chaff. Okay, but past limited at the Pro Tour, standard, of course, was the majority of the rounds we watched in between Swiss and the top eight. It looked incredibly varied. Like I said, a bunch of people just brought different decks. A wide variety of archetypes did very well. Did I ever think Azorius Control would be in the finals? No. Did I see this team? Well, the Teamer Analyst deck has been a thing for a while, but I thought it was really cool. For you, let me tell you about this Teamer Analyst.
Thank deck, God I can stop pretending to know what you're talking about.
This deck is called Teamer Analyst because it is a Teamer deck focused around Aftermath Analyst. That is a 2-drop 1/3. When it enters the battlefield, you mill 3 cards, and it has pay 4, sacrifice it, return all land cards from a graveyard to the battlefield tapped. It combines this with stuff like Spelunking, so stuff that would, your lands that would enter the battlefield tapped instead do not. Nissa, Resurgent Animist from Aftermath, is basically the only other creature in the deck. So she acts as a Lotus Cobra that also on your second land ETB for the turn will just go and find you, hopefully, another Aftermath Analyst, because Aftermath Analyst is an elf that you will reveal off of Nissa's landfall ability. And then it plays a lot of stuff like Fires of Victory, which lets you draw a card and deal damage to a creature or planeswalker equal to the number of cards in your hand. Yada, 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 yada. However, the real way that it wins the battlefield, wins the game, it puts a bunch of Virtues of Strength into play, which is a 7 CMC enchantment that makes each basic tap for triple mana. And of course, it plays a ton of basics, but it also plays a ton of the Streets of New Capenna land cycle, the fetches. When they enter the battlefield, you sacrifice them and then can go find a basic and put it onto the battlefield and you gain a life. So it just like plays all of these, you know, Maestro's Theaters, Riveteer's Outlooks, Cabaretti Courtyards, Broker Hideouts. It puts them into play. They immediately sacrifice themselves. They go and get basics. They sacrifice their Aftermath Analyst for 4 mana, bring back a ton of these lands from the graveyard to the battlefield. They all sacrifice themselves again, get a ton more basics. And then eventually they make enough mana to put a 1 or 2 Virtue of Strengths into play, which again, make basics tap for triple. And then they cast World Soul's Rage, which is a gruel X spell, X damage to any target, put up to X land cards from your hand and or graveyard onto the battlefield tapped.
Amazing.
So you just like deal 12 to an opponent, put a ton more of these cards into play. They all sacrifice themselves, have another World Soul's Rage, do it again. But they have a bunch of board wipes. They have Memory Deluges. You know, it's like a really funky combo deck. I'll put a deck list in the description for everyone else. This was kind of like the breakout performer of the weekend in a lot of ways. It's just like a very funky deck that if you were not able to kill the opponent very quickly or have a rest in peace, they would just like always go bigger than you. In regards to like, just what are you going to do? And
even if you are a really aggressive deck like Boros Convoke or something, they incidentally are gaining like 3, 4, 5, 6 plus life over the course of the game, because every time they sacrifice one of their fetch lands, they gain a life.
Yeah, I was going to say the Gapenna cycle gaining lands, life over that cycle is life. Actually yeah. huge game.
It's very relevant.
Yeah, especially in a world where like Shieldred is so relevant too, right? That's really interesting. That is a very interesting combo deck. And as you're describing it, I was like, yeah, the only thing that sounds like it really stops us is like Rest in Peace and Graveyard Hate in game two, because that is just such a truly aggressive game plan that it's not like, I mean, I guess like Azorius Control and those sorts of decks are probably running No More Lies, etc. in the main deck, so like a lot more stuff like that. But if we're looking at the rest of the top eight here, with like Boros Control or Boros Convoke rather, like what are they going to do in game one? There's not a whole lot.
Yeah, it's just like run them over and hope that they don't gain four life. You know. So that was kind of like the big breakout deck from the weekend relative to like how many people brought it. I loved watching the Pro Tour. It's great that the Pro Tour is back. The thing that did kind of make me sad was that we got to watch this awesome standard format all weekend long. There are a couple like the Canadian RC was this last weekend and it was standard. And then we have an American RC coming up in early June. That will also be standard, but like there won't really be coverage of these events. And then as soon as those RCs are done, all of the good players who like to play for incentives or are trying to qualify for the Pro Tour and stuff just won't have a reason to play standard anymore. The only upcoming reason that really anyone would have to play standard beyond, you know, just the want to play standard, I guess, is the standard showdown events getting the Cowboy Bebop cards in the coming months. But past that, we've like run out of incentive to play standard. So I'm interested to see how successful standard continues to be once it's no longer basically the PTQ and Pro Tour format anymore. We'll see what happens. I hope it sticks around. It's been an awesome format. It feels like it's still evolving. It feels like there's more space to explore. It's over 3,000 cards large right now. It is the largest standard of all time.
That's what easily. I was going to say, is with the longevity of what's in rotation now, I feel like there is definitely a lot of room to grow for what standard is and can be in the moment. It definitely needs more incentive for people to want to play it, because like standard is traditionally so hit or miss, and I think people are still very much in that mindset, and not enough people have really delved into what's going on in standard these days, myself included. I'm like so totally out of touch with what goes on there. But I'm sure there are many people like me who will watch better players than them have fun in standard and be like, okay, maybe I'll have fun playing standard too.
Yes. And that like is the incentive that exists now. Like you can have fun playing this format. It looks like a very cool, very fun format. Unfortunately, if I wanted to get in, I'd have to spend like a minimum of $200, and that's just to like have one deck. If I wanted another deck, I'd probably have to drop another $150. If I wanted to play a deck with Shieldred in it, oh my gosh.
And we've discussed this before of just like the issues of not just rotation, but how quickly things can go in and out of the meta is definitely the biggest hurdle that will remain for standard for pretty much as long as it exists just as a rotating format.
Yep. Speaking of rotating formats, let's get to the next topic for the news. And that is Modern Horizons 3. It has started to be shown off a little bit earlier than Wizards of the Coast planned. Over the last couple of weeks, someone somehow got their hands on quite a bit of Modern Horizons 3 product and was cracking some packs. They were showing off some cards that they were opening. They were mixing in other cards from their desk, like Brainstorm, creating a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm.
I think Prop Rotation was also one of the ones that was pictured.
It was just like in there. And so it's been a while since we've had a huge leak. I think it's kind of exciting. There's been some cards that look extremely strong for Modern, some cards that look extremely strong for CDH, Legacy, you know, pretty much everything. However, since there were so many leaks, Wizards of the Coast put out an article that was like, hey, yep, we've seen the leaks. We're going to officially show you some of these cards. Meltdown, Kappa Cannoneer as like reprints, some really new car, really cool new cards, like an energy based quote unquote fixed recurring nightmare, which I'm really excited about. Recurring nightmare, there's like no way to fix that card.
I love the idea of how can we fix recurring nightmare. Okay, let's use that that resource that you can never mess with, that was like notoriously broken around. That'll be the way we can just make that better, I'm sure.
Exactly. This to me seems like a perfect solution. Yeah. Have you seen the leaks? Have you seen the real confirmed cards, Mod? What do you think about them?
Yeah. So I actually, as someone who admittedly avoids a lot of things that are said on the internet, I did see this and I did take a look at the article. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great way to approach the subject of these leaks, because like you do want to be on top of these as WotC, like being like, this is true, this is untrue, and just frankly, like, yeah, here are better images of the cards. I love the way that they wrote about it in the article, aside from the pithy, like, vault, Jace let some things loose from the vault accidentally. But then just getting straight into, like, we know that you've seen these things, we know that they're out there on the internet. If you're savvy enough to, like, look at the Mothership website, you've probably undoubtedly seen these. We're not going to point you in the direction of where to go see them, but, like, here are just some better quality images of them. And definitely understand that some people are going to be upset of like, oh, that takes away from people getting to preview cards on their channels, etc. But like, also, yeah, like,
it's tough.
Yeah. But good to see that kind of acknowledgement, I think, from Wizards for the most part, and just sort of like setting the record straight in that scenario, because like it would be an incredibly long time to have that sort of speculation of like, is Brainstorm and crop rotation going to be modern legal? Like, what does this mean for the future of the format? And that kind of speculation, I think, is probably not good for the health of a lot of things.
Yep. I'm loving a lot of the cards they're showing off. Once again, these Modern Horizon sets, it's looking like they're trying to be really referential, having fun with that. You know, they made an Eldrazi Goblin Spawn Gang Commander. It's just Siege Gang Commander, but it makes Eldrazi spawn tokens instead of
the colorless Elemental Blast tokens. Was also, I think, a great, I don't remember the title of it, but yeah, lots of fun referential cards. And it does look like it is another just like push to 11 power level set so far.
Yep. Also loving the Null Drifter. 7-drop 4/4 flyer Annihilator 1. When you cast a spell, draw 2 cards. Also has Evoke in 2 and a blue.
I thought that was amazing.
Has anyone thought of this before? Has anyone thought of this card before? I also wanted to shout out Akudo, King Among Bears.
Oh, that's from this. Okay, yeah.
And a white. Cool. Yeah. A green and a white 2/2. Other creatures have base power and toughness 2/2 and are bears in addition to their other types. It's just a hate bear that makes everything bears.
And then also makes Elish Norn fans very happy. Did the thing, was that ever confirmed?
It is not. Well? It was not officially spoiled. No. I feel like that's one of the ones that like it was like leaked by the same guy and stuff. So like it like looked all right. So I assume it's coming, but I would get why they didn't show it off.
Yeah.
Cause they didn't show off everything that looked very real. And they also revealed some additional stuff we hadn't seen in the leaks.
Yeah. I think like that's where like the Wintermoon spoil comes from, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like Wintermoon was new and extra. White of the Reliquary was new and extra, yeah. But they didn't show off everything that looked relatively legitimate. And they did confirm that Brainstorm is not in the set.
Love that. Big fan of that.
God, they were like, if there's anything that could make Modern lose
its last sense of identity, it is definitely introducing Brainstorm to the format.
It's just like, hey, what if we printed the card into Modern that we kind of wish we could ban out of Legacy from a power level?
Yeah, like at that point, it's just like, okay, you've invented Legacy that doesn't use dual lands. I get it.
Yes. Hey, I mean, I'd play that format. It'd be a much more accessible format.
Now, leave your hate comments. I get it. I don't play Modern either. Come after me, Modern players. Emma's not here to defend you.
Yeah, exactly. It is interesting to me. All the cards they've shown off so far have seemed powerful, and I would say like niche powerful, like situationally powerful, archetypally powerful.
Good for certain things, kind of like the blue counter spell. Seen lots of merfolk players very happy about that.
Yeah, sacrifice a non-token blue creature to get its free mode.
It's certainly not a new force of negation by any means.
Yep. And just stuff too, like, you know, Psychic Frog, White of the Reliquary. These are just like referential, really cool designs that also want to do a very specific thing. Mm. They're like powerful cards, but they want to be powerful in a very specific way. It's not like Fury, exile a red card, blow up of your board, or pay five mana to blow up your board and have a 4/4 double striker. Like nothing like that yet. No, first striker, double striker.
Double.
What did Fury have? Oh my gosh.
It's only a 3/3. It costs five mana and has to do that.
I saw someone the other day on Twitter being like, you could unban Fury in Modern, and I just closed my Twitter tab before I said anything.
Train going by, but I'm laughing.
So it's been a long while since we've had such a big leak like this, especially one to the effect that Wizards feels the need to do some kind of, I don't want to say crisis management, but have some level of response to it.
This is definitely damage control statement. For sure. And yeah, necessary for sure. Too, because the last big one was like the Phyrexia set, right? Which like that is,
I think so,
substantially less
yes,
impactful for the future deal of Magic than Modern Horizons 3 is going to be.
So at this point, we're not seeing anything that, in my terribly misinformed opinion, looks like Modern Horizons 3 being a format rotating set, you know, the joke we came into the segment with. But of course, there is still plenty of set to go. I mean, we've only seen 88 cards so far, some of which I believe are okay. No, this is excluding the cards in the commander set.
Do we know how
the Modern Horizons 3 total? Commander precon set? let's see. Oh man, they don't put the upper limit of sets onto the set code anymore. So, not at first glance that I can see.
I didn't realize that's the thing that they don't do anymore.
Yep. Yeah, this like I'm looking at this meltdown and it just says 0282, where I would in the past have expected it to say, you know, like 0282 out of, So, I'm sure that could be solved with a quick Google. However, I am not in the quick Googling mood. Modern Horizons 3 has a normal set amount of cards in it, I'm sure. But we've only seen, which means that we have seen probably roughly a third of them. I would expect like mid 300s-ish for like an average premier set. And we have seen 88. So plenty of cards to go. It looks like Dan is quick Googling instead for me.
Google says 91.
There will be 91 cards in Modern Horizons 3. Oh wait, no, this 88 cards even includes like the different versions.
Yeah, that's
like
kind of what versions of cards as well,
we've seen,
because 80 sounded like many.
Yeah, it's a lot, but yeah, like there's four versions of Emrakul the World Anew here.
Oh, I'm sorry, here we go on the wiki cards. We've got 303 regular cards, 101 commons, 100 uncommon, 78 rares, 24 mythics.
Cool, sounds cool. I'm waiting to see the rest of the flip walkers. That's something I'm personally excited for from a design perspective. The original cycle of flip walkers from Magic Origins is one of my favorite, just like card cycles of all time. So I'm happy to see them revisiting that design space. They've already shown off the Ajani card, the Ajani flip walker. I don't think they've shown off any more of them yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like in the past, how game warping Jace was. And I kind of don't suspect the same level of power coming from, I think because of the power level of Flipwalkers, they probably won't be as powerful in the modern era. But I'm excited to see what will come of them.
Me as well. I just think it'll be fun. I think it'll be neat, hopefully. But all right, moving on. We've got one more piece of news today past this Modern Horizons leak. And that is, there is supposedly a new record for most expensive Magic card of all time, according to notable adjacent card grading company CGC Cards, a Black Lotus that they graded as a pristine 10, an Alpha Black Lotus, I should say, that they graded at a pristine 10, sold in a private sale for $3 million. It was sold by notable collector Adam K to a private buyer in a private sale. Why does CGC Cards know anything about the final sale price of a final sale? Do they think that Adam or the buyer, out of the kindness of their hearts, said, "Hey, by the way, I sold that for $3 million. I bought that for $3 million. Maybe they did, but
the seller maybe, but if you're the buyer, if you're choosing to stay anonymous, there's no yes. way you're going to contact CCG and be like, yes. "Hey, by the way, anonymous caller here. I'm the one who bought the Black Lotus and it was $3 million."
Yes. So the company has an incentive. The company has an incentive. CGC has an incentive to publicize their own grading services in a sensationalist way. And I think that a card that they graded so highly, selling for so highly, kind of falls under that. Sure, this could be true. I'm sure it actually is, but I just kind of have a grain of salt about it.
The $3 million figure is the thing that I would, I guess, be most skeptical of, because that does make certainly like an extremely easy Forbes article, right? Like Forbes, et cetera, has covered Magic enough times at this point that like yep. Magic card sells for $3 million is very good coverage for your company.
Yep, exactly. And I wouldn't doubt if it was like maybe more, I don't know, realistically, like 2.5, 2.6, 2.8, you know, round up to 3 million, maybe.
If it wasn't for 2069, they're both slipping.
Yeah, that's true. $3,420.69. Maybe like that.
Sure, yeah.
But of course, most notably, regardless of how close it was to $3 million, if it was anywhere near $3 million, that's kind of an obnoxious sum of money. And it also pretty easily beats out the reported sale price of $2 million for the one of one, the one ring from the Lord of the Rings set. Post Malone bought that for allegedly $2 million. So, yeah, friend of the show, Post Malone. I'm sure he's listened to an episode once, right?
You've got his phone number. That every... makes a friend of the show, I think.
That's fair. Fair point.
Lou is my very good friend, and they have whatever his name is, his phone number, Austin.
Austin, yeah. Austin Post. Yeah.
Austin Malone.
Austin Malone. has his phone number. Yeah, I'll just shoot him this episode and be like, "Hey, buddy, can you buy a bigger Black Lotus?"
A bigger one.
That's the can you find one of like can you just find like one of the oversized like collage Black Lotuses like and pay someone pieces. $5 million for it or something? Just, you know, can you just do that for me? I need something more to talk about on my podcast. Thank you.
We don't want to do the product watch anymore, but we do kind of like, I don't know, cool product watch.
Cool product watch. It's time for the cool product watch. Post Malone spent $6 billion on a Magic the Gathering card over the weekend.
$6 billion. That new record did really well.
So I was kind of waiting around for an Alpha Black Lotus of like really good condition or whatever to beat this record. Mm. Maybe just so someone could say they spent the most money on a Magic card. There's a lot of people out there who kind of like to flail their arms around and say, "Oh, it's ridiculous that the one of one ring sold for so much money when look at all the real history we have over here with Alpha Black Lotuses and Beta Black Lotuses, and they only sell for such and such a figure." And I do understand that to some extent, but I still think that a very cool, extremely sought after by a lot of people, one of card that, you know, very specifically is tied to one of, if not the most popular fantasy IPs of all time. I get why that would have a lot of value as well. But Alpha Black Lotus, it got there until Post Malone decides to open up the pocketbook again and rock a new high one. I don't think that'll happen. He did. I think he set the record twice in a row, though, because he owned the record for $200 million. And then I believe the record before that was he paid $800,000 for an Alpha artist proof sketched Black Lotus.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Or maybe it was Beta. I think it was a black border artist proof Black Lotus.
Yeah.
Was the previous record also owned by him. Anyways, all of that said, now that we've talked about so much money exchanging hands for Magic the Gathering, It's time to go to the Product Watch.
Product Watch. Does that ever make it in?
It's made it in every time. Do you not listen to the podcast?
Sometimes not the whole thing. I'll usually skip us talking because I've already heard that.
That's fair.
Unless there's like a specific thing, like the cow thing. I went back and made sure
that I did it.
Yeah, that you left it in. Little, otherwise, I'd yell at you on air about it.
Little do you know that I've been cutting you out of every episode for the first several of the episodes, and for all anyone knows that like Emma has been on like six more episodes than you. Last week's episode, you know, it's just like, hey guys, it's me, Cal. I'm here for a solo episode this week. No one can make it.
That would be truly devastating, I think, to find out.
All right. I have not been doing that.
Good. I'm glad to hear.
Welcome back to the Product Watch. Much like last week, we were actually kind of trying to get away without doing this because, like, there hasn't been a lot of stuff happening. There's literally no product release in the month of May, which is the first time we've been able to say that for a long time. It is, of course, there is no new like premium level, like normal set level release this month, because if the first Aftermath set hadn't flopped so badly, this is when Outlaws of Thunder Junction Aftermath would have released. So we incidentally get a little break.
Very interesting.
In our schedule here.
You know, yes. What's funny is I did see someone on Twitter the other day being like, I wish it was spoiler season. Like, it hasn't been spoiler season for 5 seconds. Come on. Get yourself together here. Oh,
gosh. Control yourself. And there's like a spring super drop going on right now. I'm kind of tired of talking about secret layers. They just keep coming. They're never going to stop coming. Smash Mouth hasn't been one. And there hasn't been one that I've been particularly impressed with or shocked by.
No, the one it's they previewed today was like Magda, Dak Faden, and some other things I really couldn't care less about.
Just like in the Wanted frame, which is a cool frame that I personally like a lot. But it's just like, okay, what am I going to do? Like, get a Magda for my.
Yeah, Magda's already a card that costs like 60 cents. It's a popular commander. It's a good commander.
Kalitas is like in there, but that hasn't been a widely played Magic card for the last 4 years.
I remember it being like $20, but that was probably like standard pump, I think.
Yeah, he was really strong in standard, and for the first while of Pioneer, he was kind of just like good enough on rate that if you were a black deck, you just played two of them.
Yeah, because it's like a Ley Line of the Void on a stick, right? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's a Ley Line of the Void on a stick, and it makes zombies when it exiles stuff, and it's like a 4-drop 3/4. I think with lifelink,
yeah, so you can like stabilize. It's 2024.
It's 2024. It's a 4-drop. Do you know what else is a 4-drop? Shieldred. That's that's where
I know you've already had a Shieldred secret layer, but you know,
what if there was another one?
Lord of the Rings dot meme.
Yeah, exactly. But there was a secret layer this time around that did kind of catch my eye, and that is the Hatsune Miku. Mm-hmm. Is that how you pronounce that?
I certainly would not know. You're asking the wrong person, but I have heard other people pronounce it that way, I believe.
Okay. Hatsune Miku, secret lair. This just feels like a big deal TM. I know Hatsune Miku will like license anything and everything, but it's a massive fandom for a reason. So I think it's fun that another massive fandom kind of gets their thing on Magic cards. Let me pull up that press release here really quickly.
Cards are gorgeous, absolutely amazing art. Some of them are pretty good. I would love to see someone with the 4 of Inspiring Vantage, because that is my favorite art among them.
The Inspiring Vantage art is sick. The Miku Lost But Singing, the combination of the title and the art really just made me burst out laughing the first time I saw it. It's like this clueless lost girl. I'm lost, but I could still sing. I can picture that. The card selection to me is like really weird. It's Shelter. When was the last time you saw someone cast Shelter?
I don't remember what this card is. Is this like an Alliances card? I truly don't remember Shelter.
I think so. It's like something very like in that
range. I have to look it up.
Chandra's Ignition, which unfortunately in classic fashion, this happens sometimes. The artist put out like the brief that they got from the artist from the Dark director. There we go. From the art director. And Miku's spark was originally supposed to be Jessica's will. It just like said that in art description. But instead, they ended up making it Chandra's ignition instead.
Also, a good card, not to the same degree.
Yeah, it's not a bad card by any means. But Jessica's will would have made me pop.
That would have been a banger.
Yeah. Feather redeemed. A cool, inspiring vantage art. Let's see. Let me see.
Confirming shelter is from Odyssey. That is an Odyssey common.
Yep. The point of the press release that they put out that hopped out to me and a lot of people seem to have missed is the line right toward the end, which I get it. It's buried under the graph. What is Magic the Gathering? So a lot of people probably tuned out at that point that are more in our circles. The next paragraph under that says Secret Lair X Hatsune Miku Sakura Superstar is the first of four drops featuring Superstar Hatsune Miku. So this is not a one-off. They are going to make four Miku drops.
That's pretty
rad. I guess we'll see. Yeah, I guess we'll see where that goes. I'm sure these will be another Secret Lair that stress tests the whole model that we've complained about at large on this podcast for a while now, the limited drop versus pre-order to demand model that they've swapped to. I'm sure the Hatsune Miku drop will sell out in no time at all, even though it has like basically no reprint value in it. I'm sure it'll sell out instantly.
Another thing about Shelter real quick, you know those websites that will just like take any image and put it on a blanket? I looked up Shelter MTG and here is Shelter the reprint for Modern Horizons 2 as a throw blanket like over a couch.
Just like, and that's like the first thing that pops up. That's very funny.
It's very towards the top.
Yeah.
Shout out to justpressprint.com. Just kidding. They are not a sponsor.
They could be.
They could get at us, Just Press Print.
Editorial at heraldhorn.com. You could be.
Sure damn could be.
Reach out. Wow. So interesting Secret Lair. The rest of the super drop, I could not care less. I mean, I looked at it the other day and it's just another range of Secret Lairs. I feel like Secret Lair is just like, it's approached that level to me. I used to love it a lot. And if there's a one that I really love, I still kind of try to like buy the singles or whatever after the fact. But man,
it's to the same degree as just like just standard
so many
now.
Of them.
Yeah, there's just absolute just overload coming. With like how they can you even coming. Keep up with what's in them?
I see them after the fact and I'm like, oh, neat.
Very frequently I will see people play a Magic card and I'm like, is that a real Magic the Gathering card? And they're like, yeah, it's a Secret Lair version of so-and-so.
And that wraps up all we have to talk about on this edition of the Product Watch.
Product Watch.
Moving on. We have one more segment for this episode. It's also been cut. We aren't doing the co-host notebook anymore. This podcast is all about me. So I don't want to hear from a co-host anymore. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. No, I'm kidding. Welcome to the co-host notebook.
It's like you're not even going to do a segment that you want to do. You're just cutting out. You're just like, I'm out of here. I started to play Hades too.
We hit 45 minutes. I'm done.
That's fair. It's 5 p.m.
No, I'm kidding. Welcome to the co-host notebook, the section of the show where the co-hosts get to drive whatever it is that we discuss. Dan, you're our only co-host this week. What is in your co-host notebook?
Let's see. In the co-host notebook, first right off the start, I just want to say that I have the new Taco Bell grilled cheese burrito, and it was disgusting. There were pepperonis in it. It was so wild.
Wait, what?
Yes, there were pepperonis
that
in
is,
it.
It was that like, is not... That is not my experience. Like my experience with whatever Taco Bell calls a grilled cheese burrito here is like one of their normal beef and insert other things burritos. And they put a bunch of cheese on the outside and just grill it.
Maybe I'm wrong about the pepperoni part, but like, I'm pretty sure I pulled a slice of pepperoni out of that thing.
I wouldn't doubt it if they were trying something freaky out there. You know,
it was terrible. Anyway, it was just god awful. I could not.
What was your opinion on it as
someone who has also had one?
Oh, I mean, I've had something called a grilled cheese burrito at Taco Bell, but it was just like a normal Taco Bell burrito, but it had a bunch of cheese on the outside.
So you're saying thumbs up?
Yeah, that ripped.
It was way thumbs down for me. When you get out here, we'll have to. I'll bring you to the local Taco Bell for a horrid experience.
Like, hey, can I get the grilled cheese burrito with pepperoni, please? This guy swore to me you have that.
I can't imagine anything that a Philadelphian drive-through worker would care about less. other than my horrible Taco Bell experience, I've been playing a ton of MTGO. Got my Daybreak account. Shout out to the Daybreak people for doing this. It's been an awesome experience so far. I've been getting a ton of Vintage and CDH on stream, and the Vintage community has been extremely kind to me, which has been very, very nice. I've been getting raids from some very lovely people, including Tony Scaponi, and I am actually level one, Justin Gennari. Very lovely people. All their fans have been super, super nice, hanging out in chat, giving out gifts and stuff like that. It's been a very warm welcome to the Eternal community. So that's been very nice. And it's been a ton of fun, too. Vintage is a ton of fun to play. CDH is a lot of fun to play on MTGO, even if it is a very hit or miss experience from time to time.
Makes a lot of sense. Have you had any super game breaking bugs?
No, I've been pretty lucky for the most part. Like, people disconnecting is not a super uncommon experience, but I have been getting most of my reps playing Rograk Silas, and the main combo engine in that deck is Necropotence. So, like, I'm holding priority to activate Necropotence 38 times and then letting that resolve at my end step, which is, like, it takes a lot out of MTGO for sure, but I haven't gotten to the point of it full on, like, breaking and resetting and running through the game. I've had people tell me in chat that they've had it like fold over in on itself for much less than that, though.
Yeah, I have heard specifically it's pretty easy to break the game with Necro. Like, if you
auto yield through your own.
If you auto yield through your Necro, it will break it.
Yeah. Your opponents are able to F6 through it, but if you have to manually resolve it all, or it will break, is what I've been told.
Oh, Magic the Gathering Online, our beloved. I did see in the patch notes for today, I don't remember if I talked about it here, if I just wrote about it or whatever, but they did finally fix the bug with Jessica, such that she actually gets loyalty counters the way she's supposed to, where for the current run of the Commander Leagues up until today, until the next patch, she got counters equal to all commanders that have been cast. This game, the total number of commanders that have been cast. I know. You just like cast it and you're like, my Jessica has 9 loyalty counters. Explode everything. Kabloo. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yes. I'm glad you've been enjoying it. I'm glad you're able to get in there. Have you given away your play points successfully?
No, I'm waiting to go on to stream again to do that, because I've had a lot of people who have joined the Moderately Anonymous community recently over on Twitch. So I would love to give back to a lot of those people who seem to be very big MTGO fanatics.
Love to hear it. Well, Dan, we've gone for 50 minutes somehow already. I'm sure we'll lose half of it to editing down. Yeah, I'm sure we'll have to cut half of it to whatever messed up stuff I said. But do you have anything else in your co-host notebook, and or do you have anything you would like to leave our listeners with?
Just going to plug myself real quick. Go follow me on Twitch and YouTube, Moderately Anonymous MTG. I am doing a ton of Eternal streaming over there on MTGO now, so go check it out. It's a super fun time. And also invest in your community. So if you don't have a local library card, go get one and support your local library. It's a great way to help out your community, and do that in any way you can.
Hey, it's me again, Cal. I hope you're really enjoying this episode. If you are really enjoying it, consider joining the Brass Section and supporting us on Patreon. For just $5 a month, you can help me pay my bills and also the bills of the co-hosts. You'll gain access to our supporter exclusive show, Heraldic Banter, and you'll also get unceremoniously tossed into our Discord. Check out the link now in the podcast notes to toss us a few bucks. We really appreciate it. And welcome back. Today I am joined by Shivam, better known as Gear Per Gears online.
Am I actually better known as Gear Per Gears, or am I just better known as Shivam?
Well, better known as Shivam.
I'm a Shiv you right now.
Welcome to the Harold's Horn podcast, where you get to learn the correct way to pronunciate all of my friends' names. Thanks for coming on today, Shivam.
Hello, my friend. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. A little note for the listeners. Shivam is my hero this week because Shivam is my first ever like emergency guest. all of my other potential guests kind of fell through. And Shivam was like, well, I'm free. I was like, perfect. We're here.
Look, man, as a fellow interviewer podcast, I understand.
Yeah, you get it. Yeah, you get it.
Oh, I know.
So for many of these interviews, I usually have like a very specific topic or whatever. Like I talked to Chase Manicurves about Secret Lairs, and I talked to Tom Marks from IGN about the weird Kotaku issues and the state of the gaming media and all that kind of stuff. But today, Shivam, you have a whole podcast where you talk to people about them. So I figured today on my podcast, we would talk about you. You're just a dude who happens to have who happens to be on the Commander Advisory Group and who happens to have three podcasts.
Yeah.
Three? Four?
Well,
a fifth in the works.
I was thinking about another one, but then I'm like, three is quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where editing this just becomes a real.
Yep.
It's not the talking part. It's the editing and posting part. That's just the
correct.
Real humdinger.
Yeah. Like if I only had to record episodes of the Herald Horn, I'd be doing this for decades.
Right. It'd be super easy. This is why bigger podcasters have teams of other people who do all that nonsense for you. I'm like, it would be so much easier if I could just talk into the can and let somebody else deal with what comes out. But I'm way too much of a control freak to let people actually touch the audio of my show.
That's a fair point. So I think we should rewind way back here. I'm going to ask you the first question that I ask every single guest on this show, because this is a Magic the Gathering podcast. So therefore, we have to ask the stereotypical Magic the Gathering podcast question. Shivam. Where did your adventure with Magic the Gathering begin?
I have a funny story that I've told many times that I do enjoy telling quite a bit, which is that in junior high school, so in 1994, I was walking into my band class right after recess. And because in middle school, you know, you have your morning recess and your lunch recess and whatever. And so I was in the band and I was walking in to the class right after at the end of recess to just, you know, set up and hang out. And I hear in the back of the room, my friend Jeff going like, okay, I'm going to cast a fireball on your dragon. And I'm like, now at this point, I'm like, maybe let's see, 13 years old, 14 years old, something. But I've been playing D&D since I was like 8 and reading like Dragonlance novels and everything. So when someone says fireballs and dragons, I'm immediately there.
Yeah. You're immediately
like,
sold. Yeah.
I'm like, I need to know whatever's happening because I need to be part of this. And I go there. And I see my friends are sitting on the ground in the back of the band camp, in the back of the camp. I keep saying camp, but I mean, because I guess
it's about that time of year. I don't know.
I was looking at band
camps on the mind.
Yeah, exactly. Like my son is actually looking for a band camp. So that
exactly.
But yeah, it was more that I was just sitting there and I'm like, I see these dudes slamming some cards on the ground and I'm like, what the hell is cards? I need to know. And I go and I pick them up and I look. And I'm like, these are like all these fantasy creatures and like wizards and serpents and dragons and spells in your hand. And you're two wizards and you've got your spell books and you're summoning armies and casting them at each other. I'm like, oh, I need to know what's going on here. And I look at this dragon and this dragon looks completely sick and it's got this big roaring face. And I look down. And I'm like, that's a Shivan. Did they misspell my name? What the hell? And I was immediately so mad. So mad. And my friend is like trying to explain to me the game. He flips over cards like, yeah, there's like ally colored and enemy colored. I'm like, well, whatever's the enemy of that red one I want to be. He's like, so blue and white? Yeah, blue and white. That's totally what I am. And so I gave him $20 of hard earned lawnmower money. And he went and brought me a deck that he built out of like his chaff of Revised Dark and like, because this is right around the dark, right when Revised just come out. And Revised Dark and Unlimited cards or whatever. And there's like sea serpents and water elementals and, you know, walls, like Wall of Swords and Wall of Water and Sarah Angel. One Mahamoodi Jinn, of course, became my favorite character and card of all time. But it was basically lots of counterspells and Swords of Plowshares and like Wrath of Gods. It was effectively a blue-white draw-go control deck, which of course anybody who knows me knows that blue-white draw-go control is exactly,
Right up your alley.
Right up my alley. But like that deck was my deck for a long time. I had blue-white. I had like, I got a Trop and I put it in there and I got a, I got like, you know, Birds of Paradise, and I built this Bant deck with a Nicol Bolas in it. And it was awesome. I loved it so much, but I was so mad about Shivan Dragon. I literally didn't play red cards for like 15 years, even though by all rights, I am the like greenest, reddest green red mage who's ever green redded. And I'm like here sitting playing friggin' like Power Sync and Spell Blast and like Armageddon and Wrathlocks and things. But yeah, it was an utter blast. Like we were hardcore into Pogs. If you don't remember Pogs in 1992, 93, they were like,
oh, like the slang that you say when you really like something, you say Pog, you were really into doing that.
I mean the Hawaiian milk caps where you put them in a stack and try to flip them over and steal them from your friends. And everybody's like, what the hell's a Pog? Well, let's just put it this way. When Magic came out, all of us who were Pogging stopped Pogging and started shuffling.
Okay, now there's an audio clip I can use. Magic the Gathering came out, all of us who were Pogging stopped Pogging.
And we've never picked it up since. There's no Pogging in the Magics. And then in like, you know, 1995 or whatever, the world championships were, or like America had the nationals in San Jose. So I went and I visited and I saw that and I was like, whoa, this is cool. I still have like my DCI number from way back then. And like, I remember going back and it was wild. I asked Scott Larrabee later to let me unify my new and old DCI numbers. And he did that. And I was able to find the first FNM tournament I ever won in 1995 on that record where we were playing sealed deck. So it was like they give you a starter deck and like two boosters and you have to build a deck. And I won with Ghost Ships, which was awesome. But yeah, like I started playing Magic then. I got hardcore super into all my buddies and I. We would play like 12-way, you know, multiplayer games after school in math class on the sidewalk the way God intended, you know, plastic baggies and rubber bands, all the things. And then like, you know, PlayStation came out and all of us were like, oh, we could spend money on like Mirage or Visions or whatever, but this is dumb. Like, here's the thing. I was so, when Visions came out, Mirage and Visions came out, I was like, facing and flanking. This is stupid. Why do we need more mechanics? This is dumb. And this is going to break, like, this is going to kill Magic forever. So I just was over it. And I used my money instead to buy a PlayStation and Final Fantasy Tactics. And I don't regret that at all until literally Urza Saga came over, like, the next set. And then I'm like, of course, I regret it. I regret all right, everything.
Fine. Enough Final Fantasy Tactics for me. I'm going back to Magic.
I didn't go back to Magic for a long time. Like, I paid attention to it, but like in college, I got back into D&D hardcore and Dragonlance and like my true loves of like, you know, D&D and like novels and things like that. And I played other card games. I played Magi Nation. I played Legend of the Five Rings. I played like Netrunner and Illuminati and all these other things. But at the time, though, Magic the Gathering's online was still going. Their website had just started, and Rosewater was posting articles, and people were posting articles every week. And I was in college on a T1 line, so I was just famished for anything to read. And so I'm like, I would read D&D updates all the time because I was on there for Dragonlance stuff. And I was like, oh, the Magic thing's still going. Okay, I'll just read these articles, and they're fascinating. They're really good. And I was just like keeping up with the game, and I would go to my LGS all the time and hang out, and I'd watch people playing, and I'd see like, oh yeah, it's always a will bender, or you know, like, ooh, skull clamps and Mirrodins. And I learned about things like what the hell was it, combo winter, when everybody was playing like Squandered Resources and Prosbloom and Necropotence and all those things. And I kept up with Magic tentatively, but like wasn't really back into it until like I graduated, I graduated college, I went to Japan, I did all these things, I came back. And then Xbox had Duels of the Planeswalkers show up in 2011. And I was like, oh, I love this.
I thought you were going to say Magic Battlegrounds. And I was like, I don't know how that got you back.
Battlegrounds? Come on. That game is, okay, in Chandelar, I played the hell out of Chandelar in 1997. And then I just recently re-got it and I remembered everything I love about Magic. And I'm like, this is the best game of all time. Sid Meier's Chandelar, the only way to play Magic. But
I forgot it was a Sid Meier game.
Literally the last game he made at Microprose before he moved off to make Firaxis his own company. Yeah, it's Sid Meier, of course, my favorite game designer of all time. So like, if he's going to make a Magic game, it's going to be the best Magic game. So my friend was like, hey, man, you've been playing a lot of, you know, duels. And I'm like, yeah, it's super cool. He's like, you want to come with me to a draft? And I was like, what's a draft? And because I'd literally, when I was playing as a kid, there was no drafting. And we go to this Irish pub in San Francisco called Kennedy's. Kennedy's is wild because it's half Irish pub, half Indian restaurant. So you can buy samosas and like your kormas and naans and things, and then wash them down with a big old pint of Guinness and whatever. And so we go in there and I'm drafting.
Sounds like a great place to be.
Oh yeah, dude. If you're going to draft and you want to have like a good time, that's a place to go. So I went to draft there and they were drafting Rise of the Eldrazi. You know what is a great, great format to play when you don't know what the hell you're doing?
Hey, here's one of the most skill intensive draft formats of all time. Have fun.
Yeah. And you know what the first card I opened was? Sarkin the Mad.
Oh,
I have never seen a planeswalker before.
You have no clue how it works.
I thought it had
as far as planeswalkers go, it's like it's not even like a planeswalker that really like tells you the joke.
It's all like minuses.
Three levels down. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm it like, only what, hurts itself. What do I do with this? I don't understand. It's like, and I thought it had summoning sickness. I put it out, the other dude attacks it and kills it. I'm like, oh, I could have just used.
Wait a second.
Huh. Yeah. That did not go well. But then, you know, Innistrad comes back. Innistrad comes out and I was like super into the idea of zombies and everything. And I go there and I go to my Innistrad pre-release. And at that pre-release, there's a dude named Brian, who's this local teacher who's actually kind of cool. And him and his wife are there. And they're also coming back to Magic to Innistrad because it's kind of neat. And we become friends and we start hanging out. And there's this lady named Ashlyn who's hanging out there, and some dudes from LA named Jimmy and Josh came up and hung out, and it's like, huh, neat. And this dude, Brian, later on, of course, he asked me to help him out make some videos that he was going to do because he wanted to start up a channel reviewing cards, card sleeves and card boxes. And mm-hmm. He was like, oh yeah, you know, I could be like professorial about it and do it like I'm doing my college classes. I was like, that's a neat gimmick, I guess. And I wonder if he ever made anything of himself.
I don't know if he went anywhere, yeah. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, but I came back to Magic, though, and then like I started going hard. I, like, immediately I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I went to Worlds that year. Worlds was in San Francisco 2011. And I went to Worlds and because I was unemployed. I had just been let off from PlayStation, and I was just hanging out. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to go to Worlds. It's Wednesday. I've got nothing to do, and it's beautiful up there. So I go out and visit, and it's right on the pier off by the Golden Gate Bridge. Gorgeous area. And we're hanging out there, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to sit down and draft. I mean, it's $5 a draft, and you get a cool Johnny promo. Sure, why not? And I sit down, and I draft, and I'm sitting there. You know who's drafting at Worlds? With the Magic World Champion World Cup, and then also the World Championship. So like Team Japan, Team Finland, those are the people who are drafting on a Wednesday when you're hanging out at Worlds. And I'm just sitting here, this scrub who's recently come back to the game.
I love playing Magic. Playing it's so
it on
fun.
On Duels of the Planeswalkers, you know? And I sit down with Team Japan, and I'm like, I speak Japanese at this point. I lived in Japan. I speak pretty good. And we're having a good old chat, and it's great. And I'm drafting, and these guys are looking at me like, what are you taking? And I'm like, I'm taking cards. And he's like, why did you pass this? And I was like, and I realized like a decade later that I was just destroying all these people's drafts because I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, and people are trying to get in like serious world prep drafts.
And literally you're just practicing. Like, and I'm just like, look, it's a pretty zombie. I'll take it. And I'm like,
just like, I'll pass the cleaver.
Yeah. Like, no, like they're like, what the hell? What are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm talking and I'm playing against this guy. And he's like, oh, excuse me. I have to get up and I have to go do this presentation thing. I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. He gets up and he's in this full kimono thing. And it's Shuhei Nakamura. And he's getting his Hall of Fame ring. And I was but yeah, like I had gone to PAX a couple of times and I had played like with the free Magic things. My wife and I had bought a dual decks, Elspeth versus Tezzeret. And I brought that with me. And I sat there and I spell slung against like the Magic creators I met. Because ironically, I had met Mark Rosewater at Gen Con SoCal in 2006. I got a picture of him dressed like a donkey for the unhinged or unglued or whatever the hell it was pre-release. Anyways, so I sit there and I'm playing with him, and he's got this gimmick where if you play against him, he'll draw you a token of whatever you're using. And he drew me a soldier token. And so I got that in my Elspeth deck because I love playing Elspeth and soldiers and the whole thing. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at these guys and, you know, they're teaching me what fetch lands are for. And I'm like deck thinning. And I'm like, why would you lose life to do this?
Who cares?
But
yeah,
I'm getting my ass kicked like all day long, right? And at the end of the day, I'm like, okay, well, Magic was fun. This is cute, but I've played like three seals and I've lost them all. And I'm getting shellacked by this kid and he destroys me. And afterwards, I'm like, well, I guess I'm just going to, that was fun. I'm going to call it a day on Magic and move back to my other hobbies. He's like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah, man, I just keep losing. I don't know how to do this. I'm just getting wrecked here. And he sits there and he's like, well, hang on, let me look at your deck. And he pulls out my deck. He's like, well, you got, you know, good fundamentals here. You've got a nice curve. Let me show you. Put this card in, that card out. This is how you play the thing. This is what you should be looking for. 17 lands, 23 spells, that sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, neat. And then it turns out, like, as I'm watching the tournament a little later, he's that year's Mox champion, the Magic Online champion, just who happens to be playing in Worlds for World Championship. A young man who from New York named Reed Duke, who taught me how to play Magic.
I haven't heard of that guy.
Yeah, and it turns out, like, that weekend was insanely influential for me. You know, like, because it cemented me as both wanting to be in Magic as more than just a casual traveler, and also wanting to be that kind of person. A person who will just stop and help somebody, teach them how to play, show them the ropes, just for, no, He had no reason to stop and hang out. And like, it's after the match. He's already beaten me. Shake my hand, go home, you know, whatever. It's late. But no, homie stuck around. It was like, hang on. We're going to solve this problem right now, because this is not like, you could do better than this. And it was amazing. It was absolutely like a life-changing moment for me. And then I went home, and a few months later, this dude, Tim Willoughby, writes his article on the Mothership about like Grimgrin, which is this cool card that I got from my Innistrad pre-release, one of my favorite, like, I got a foil fancy one. I didn't get a foil, but it was my mythic in my pack.
Mm-hmm. In your pool.
Yeah, and I was like, this card rules. And he's like, hey, there's this format called Commander, or Elder Dragon Highlander, rather, or something, where it's like, you can play with all these old cards, like Sol Ring and stuff. And I'm like, what? And I can build a deck around Grimgrin, and it's amazing, and holy crap. And I did that, and I was like, wait, does this mean I can go and play like my favorite card of all time, Kaldoran Outpost? And because like I had a million super fancy cards when I was a kid, and they got lifted out of my brother's backpack when he was in junior high school, and I lost like all of my duels, my Trops, my Mahamudis, all that shit. Everything was vaporized. And so that's part of why I didn't come back to Magic for a long time, because all that stuff got stolen, and that's a real bummer. But when I discovered Commander and discovered, oh, I can just play, and like, when Ravnica, the next set after Innistrad was Return to Ravnica, and then Guilds of Ravnica, what was the second set? Gatecrash come out, and in my pre-release pool, I got Assemble the Legion, and I was like, red, blue, it's red, white, and it makes soldier tokens just like my old Kaldoran Outpost. Maybe I can make a soldier deck, and I built this freaking soldier deck, which uses the token that Mark Rosewater gave me, and I ended up filling it with all my favorite token cards. And because by that point on my forums online, the olden days when we used to text on forums, a friend of mine named Bouge introduced me to Commander. We played Commander Star, which is to say, like, you know, five of us are playing and we each fight against the opposite colors or whatever, but we were playing by post on a forum. So the game took 2.5 months.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. The first deck I ever played.
That's fun, though.
It was hella fun. And I played with Janara in Bant. So I had a cool Exalted deck with a bunch of just draft trash from Zendikar block. And I was like, this is amazing. This is everything I want to be doing in Magic. And I got the pre-cons. I got jamming on that. And that was how I then just cemented myself in Magic. And then time passes and Origins comes out later, and I'm writing an essay. Like, I've been in the games industry for a long time. And during that time in 2014 or whatever, there was Gamergate was going on. I was getting targeted by hate speech and death threats and bombs and everything because I also had written an article about Far Cry and how the cover of Far Cry 3 was like the most racist thing I'd ever seen in my life. And it was absolutely just this horrific pastiche of like mocking Indian and Asian cultures. And it's either Far Cry 3 or Far Cry 4. I can't remember. Far Cry 3.
Three is just like the guy sitting on the beach.
Exactly. There's like a dude sitting on a statue and there's a guy kneeling next to him.
Yes. Well, this one has, let's see, there's a guy sitting on a beach and there's like a guy buried.
Far Cry 4, not 3.
Far Cry 4.
If you look at the cover of Far Cry 4, there's this white dude on this statue of the Buddha with his foot on the head of the statue while a kneeling brown guy with a grenade in his hand is there. And it's literally just about as offensive as you can get to Hindu, Buddhist, or Dharmic people. Because A, you're putting your foot on the head of a god. B, you're sitting on a deity statue. C, you've got this brown guy with a grenade kneeling at your feet while you're putting his hand on your head. Every step of the way was just a misery minor. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Gamergate folks were not into that.
Yeah, I'm sure they loved that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I was friends with like folks like Jen Frank and Zoe Quinn and everything and all these other people who were just getting shellacked by this. But Magic then puts out this set, Origins, and in it, they introduced Kaladesh. And I was like, I wrote this lengthy essay about my hopes and dreams of Kaladesh and like how it, I feel like they'd let me down, taken our, you know, culture and stripped it of its meaning and, you know, reuse it for this sort of thing. And then Prof takes that essay and publishes it and shares it to the people. And he was at that point the biggest name in Magic and remains the biggest name in Magic by not even close. And then suddenly everybody in WotC and everybody everywhere knows me. And I'm hanging out with like the Vorthos crew and all the people on Twitter. And then I get invited to come on to Commanderin to talk about Commander. And I was like, I love Commander and I can talk about Kaladesh and stuff. And then they're like, hey, you're really good at this. You want to just join our podcast? So I did that. God, I feel like I've gone well past your first question.
No, this is, you know, Shivam, the easier you make it on me, the better.
Didn't you? You were like saying in when we were discussing this, you're like, yeah, I'm not sure we're actually going to crack even the first question. I've only got 45 minutes. How are you going to go? And I'm like, oh, I literally, well, like we're in 2020, not like 1994 or so.
The kicker is you've just naturally taken it in the direction of all the questions I was going to ask anyway. It's just me like, oh, so what happened next? Oh, that's a man. You really came up around a lot of other successful content creators, but you yourself now created quite a lot of content. And how did we get to Casual Magic? I know about the Commanderin podcast, right? How'd you get on the Commanderin podcast?
You know, it's
so wild. You know, you're just preempting all of my questions, Shiva.
You know, it's wild. Jimmy Wong, who is a delightful human being and one of the dudes on the Game Night Command Zone. I knew him way back in 2000 when he was just a kid running the Magi Nation mailing list and we were just friends playing Magi Nation. I was in Cali, he was in Seattle and it was a very small community. We all knew each other. And then I ran into him again later when he did a viral song that he did about racism in UCLA and like the Ching Chong song or something he called it. And then I ran into him again later when I was, a huge fanboy of the Command Zone podcast and would tweet at them like whenever they would say pronunciation errors or something and they would start shouting me out in early episodes. And I got to meet them in GPLA and we all became really good friends and I went out to eat with Josh and Jimmy. And then I asked them if I should join the podcast and they're like, well, and they gave me a bunch of really good advice on what to do and how to do it. But then you'll be our rivals. And so maybe we won't be able to hang out quite as often. I'm like, that's fair, I guess. In hindsight, I should have taken that more seriously, but it's okay because I had 5 years on the Commanderin where I became one of the authorities of this casual format and became friends with, Sheldon and
everyone else,
in all of these different capacities who came to know me. And it was wild because like in 2016 when Kaladesh came out and I went to like the beginning of that year, I went to GPLA and I hung out with Josh and Jimmy at their first little commander. And the first command zone meetup had like 12 people at a GP, right? Like there was like nobody and we had enough people to play in like two pods. Nowadays, Josh and Jimmy is like a 4-hour line.
Yep.
And it's amazing. And I'm so proud of
it. It can be a 4-hour line to like see Josh and Murph.
Yeah. Right.
Just, not Josh,
It's literally anybody in there.
Yeah. Jake and Josh. There we go.
Yeah. Like even the editors could sit down and get a 4.5-hour line. Right. Like, but, because me and Josh were both trailer editors, and so we bonded over that. And later on, like when during the Kaladesh PAX in 2016, I went up and I made a bunch of statements and wrote some essays that weekend, and they became very popular about race and representation and everything. And Wizards changed a lot of their behaviors after that that set and discussion. So if I'm the one who has to take the arrows so the other people can get the you know, get the land, then fine. I wish it didn't have to be that way, but somebody's always got to be the one to die on the spear so that other people can have a clear path. It sucked. It sucked a lot. But the upside of that is I got to meet like the folks at LRR, and like I got to meet a bunch of other content creators and fans and stuff who had been brought there by WotC to celebrate. And it was really, really cool. And the Loading Ready Run guys and I became very good friends over time. And they invited me eventually to a PPR for the return to Ravnica, the Simic set, whatever it was. And like, I became friends with Marshall and, you know, other people up there. I'd been friends with Marshall. Honestly, I'd met him many times at GPs. But one of the things that was really cool that weekend is that I get an email from Sheldon Menery saying, "Hey, I'm planning on creating this thing, this group of advisors who will come on and help the rules committee run Commander, tell us what we're doing wrong, tell us what we're not paying attention to, tell us what the people are talking about, and give us your advice and your thoughts and your ideas on the format. Tell me why you shouldn't be on it." And I was like, I'm a goofball casual essayist. I don't know crap. You should have like Jimmy and Josh. You should have like, you know, Rachel Agnes, you should have like all these other people who are like genius tier commander players. And like, I don't know how to build a deck. I don't know. I'm just here to goof off and have fun. And they're like, "Yeah, what do you think 90% of the commander players are?"
Yeah, just people goofing off, having fun.
like
not making tons of content, yeah, all that kind
Sheldon
of stuff.
Sheldon was like, "I have more rules knowledge and judges here in the rules committee than literally all of humanity does," right? Like, I don't need you to tell me how Commander works.
Yeah, we get that part. Yeah. We just need to figure out how other people plays are
and what it does. And I was basically, he had gone first to Josh Lequai, and Josh was like, "You should talk to Shivam." And he talked to me. And then that weekend, I was very lucky because it was a PPR. So the next day, all four of the rules committee folk are sitting there and just watching the PPR stream. And later on, I get a message from Gavin who says, "You're the kind of player that I would love to play with, you know, and you're the kind, like, you've got the kind of joie de vivre, the kind of just exuberance that we're looking for. And you love this stuff." Like, it was wild. When I first met Ethan Fleischer at GP Vegas 2017, 2016, he's like, "Shivam, I don't think I've ever met anybody who loves Magic as much as you. And I don't mean the game. I just mean the idea of Magic." Yeah. Just like, there's nobody who's just so enthusiastically thrilled to be here. And I was like, if that's what I'm known for, that is a wonderful thing to be known for. Like, it rules. Like, I want to be known as a guy who loves Magic. Hell yeah, let's go. But yeah, like that weekend, I ended up getting an invitation to the CAG. And he was like, "Who else should I have on here?" And I was like, "Here's a bunch of names of people who I think are some of the most important people in this format at the time." And then later on, I was also like, "You should also have Jim from the Spike Feeders and Olivia and, like, you know, Rachel Weeks, who is just genius, absolute one of the most brilliant people." But like, the CAG is just full of some of the most incredible, thoughtful, and intelligent people in Commander. And people who are not prone to histrionics, outside of me, people who are not prone to like losing their head over details, but are also willing to open themselves to encompassing the entire idea of the format. And joining that body had made me such a better player and also representative of just casual Commander. And I was like, "Wow, man, that's hella fun. It's so much fun to like talking Magic with people who know Magic is why I do my show," right? It's the most fun. It's like so much fun. I mean, look, playing Magic is great. I love playing Magic. We all play Magic. But there's a joy of talking about a thing you love with people who you know, understand it as intimately as you do, so that you don't have to translate yourself. You don't have to dumb it down. You don't have to shadow the soul you have in order to be as exuberant as you can possibly be. It's like when I first went to Gen Con in 2000 and I discovered other people who love Dragonlance like I do. And I met this dude, Weldon, who's been on my mailing list with me for like, he was on the Dragonlance mailing list. I've known him for years and years. And we met up and we hung out and he pulled out a map of Antillon, the continent that Dragonlance takes place on. And we're just poring over it and talking like two scholars who understand this intimately. And it's just like that joy of being in a position and being in a place where everybody knows what you're talking about and they aren't going to mock you for it. They're not going to like slag you for being a nerd. Everybody there loves the thing you love as much as you do. And it's the greatest feeling. That's why GPs and Magic Cons rule. That's why we have such a hard time coming home from them. That's why these podcasts, like I did Commander in and after like, you know, after a couple of years of that, I was getting tired of it. I didn't want to just talk about Commander all the time. And when I got onto the CAG and stuff, that started causing some more friction and like some other just weirdness. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to talk about Commander all the time. That's not the thing I like doing. And I was carrying the show kind of at that point. And I went up and Prof had invited me out to fly up to DC, to Washington to tape, or not to Washington, to Oregon, to tape a sketch called the Commander Rules Committee sketch or something like that. It was funny as hell. It was me, Olivia Tappy, and him making like jokes about like playing Rhystic Studies and whatever. And that weekend, Tappy and Olivia are two of the greatest people in the world, for one thing. They're two of the kindest people and two of the people you want to have as your friend, because they will tell you how it is, but also they will throw you on the ground, but then pick you up, dust you off and say like, yo, let's, you know, like you can never find somebody better in your corner than those two. And they were like, hey, look, you love talking to people. You love sharing the joy and love of magic. And this focus on Commander all the time is not it. It's cool, but that's not fun for you. You're not going to have a good time. And I came away from that. And I was like, and we sat that weekend and brainstormed new ideas for new programs, new shows. And I was like, what if we call it Shuffle Up and Play? And they're like, wow, that's a great idea. Great name. And then later we came down to, no, but that's not what you're doing though. Cause you're not playing things. I'm like, I'm not playing.
Yeah. We're just talking.
We're just talking. It's like, what if you just call it the thing that you are? Casual magic. Just call it casual magic achievement. It's great. And I was like, casual magic. It's what I do. It's my brand. It's literally what I'm here for. Right. And cause at that point I'd already been like kind of just the casual dude. I'm here to play doofy things at slow speeds and the clunkiest cards imaginable, you know, just because you like the way the art looks. Like Eldrazi display, not Eldrazi, what's it? Kozilek's Translator is like a card that is real garbage, does absolutely nothing, but it's got the most gorgeous art on it. And I'm like, yes, I will use that version. There was also like a fetch line in there that was super good. But yeah, like the thing is like, I was definitely here to just be like, take these doofy cards that look cool and remember that even the most garbage 2-cent draft chaff common is somebody's first favorite beloved card, right? And like, I didn't do like daily randoms on Twitter where I just sit there and like, I post a card, I'm like, isn't this rad? And people are like, no, that's complete dog crap. And I'm like, yeah, it is. But so somebody loves it. And inevitably, I find the one person who does love it. And I'm like, I made their day.
Yep. They're always there.
Yeah.
Yep.
But like, so we started and I started doing a podcast on that. And then lockdown happened. And I was like, you know what? Turns out having an interview podcast where I can carve out an hour to talk to my friends is literally the best possible thing to do when you're stuck inside of a box
lockdown.
And yep. Can't go anywhere.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, like I became friends with, you know, Verhey and all these other people. And I'm very proud to say the kind of influence I've had on Magic. Like they've changed a lot of things because of me. Commander has changed a number of things because of me. And, you know, there's somebody else like, oh man, look at you humble bragging. And then someone else was like, those aren't humble brags, dog. Those are accomplishments. It's like, it's not a humble brag. It's as much as it's like a celebration of, look, I've gotten to impact this thing that's changed my life so much and it rules. Yeah. I mean, later on I had this dude Wheeler from Loading Ray Run come on my show and we would end up just talking about like I had him on to talk about white decks and why white decks are in Commander are fine. And we ended up just having a 3-hour long chat talking about cards and be like, oh my God, that card's cool. Oh my God, that card's cool. And people are like, yo, you guys love those cards so damn much. Maybe you should
And then your third podcast was born?
That was my second podcast.
Oh, your second podcast. Yeah, my second podcast. Okay.
Like, And I didn't want to propose it to him because I was like already pushy enough to be like, hey, come on my show. But I basically seeded it enough until Wheeler was like, yo, you know, people like that. Maybe there's something we could do here. And I'm like, yes, I've been waiting for you to say so. And he comes on and we create Sheevam and Wheeler Love Magic. And where we just sit there and literally take a set and just start going into it and be like, this card rules. No, this card rules. They both rule. But then my friend John was like, actually, we don't get to talk as much as we used to when we were in college and younger, didn't have kids and lives and things. And I started rereading these Dragonlance books that my dad got me a long time ago. And I know you're into Dragonlance. Can we, you want to do something? I'm like, I love having a chance to talk like an adult with my friends. And so we started doing a Dragonlance thing. And it was originally going to be like, we talk about a book, an episode, and then we just kind of keep going. It ended up being, because Dragonlance is literally the thing I love more than magic. So I know more than magic. I'm like, maybe the most knowledgeable person in the world about Dragonlance. And that's not even like, that's not even a brag. That's like this.
Yeah, that's not even a brag. It's the authors returned to writing Dragonlance and said, ah, we know who should be the guy we fact check stuff with.
Yeah, literally.
And it was you.
Yeah. Exactly that. Yes. But, and it ended up being like, we're going to go a couple of chapters at a time and do a read along. And I'm just going to, and cause he's like a ex Mormon and I'm like a Dragonlance fan. So we can sit and talk about this from both the Mormony side and the Dragonlance side. And we end up having this incredible, we did a year and covered the first novel and it was fantastic. And now we're going to cover the second novel and just keep going from there just because why the hell not? I don't know, man. It's like podcasting is so much fun. Talking about things you love is so much fun. Why wouldn't I do this all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is money.
Dude, I know we were talking about it kind of right before I think we started recording, or maybe it was during we were recording. I don't even remember anymore. But turns out podcasting would be a lot easier if I myself did not have to do all of like the editing part and could just hop on the horn and talk to my friends. Or if I like had the money to just pay someone else to edit, because I definitely don't have that either.
Weirdly enough, like I probably could ask somebody, because I've got people who do my video editing, and I could probably just tell them like, hey, can I just give you these tracks and let you audio edit them?
Yeah, and you just also do the audio part
but
too.
But then
yeah.
I'm like, I trained as an audio video editor. Like, I don't remember the video part, but I definitely remember the audio part. And I'm like, I don't know that I want to give that up necessarily, though I'm probably going to soon just because it's a lot. And I would rather be able to have more time to do more shows.
Makes sense.
But you know what's weird, Cal?
I'm sorry, show 4 through 6.
Yeah, right? Like, no, how much Sheevam do you really, really want in your life? And the answer is probably not that much. But
look, I listen to most casual magic episodes. It's a good amount of Sheevam.
Yeah, you know what I've learned is a lot of people, like, casual doesn't get the numbers that Sheevam and Wheeler do, but that's because Sheevam and Wheeler is a show that just talks about magic cards and people loved that. Casual magic, because it's an interview show, people either listen to the episode that feature people they know or topics they care about.
Yeah, topics.
And they care about. Sometimes they'll just put it on and be like, oh, I don't know this person. I'll just listen to this thing.
Yeah, I'll just listen.
But like, that's one of the challenges with interview shows is like, you're only going to, you can only go so far with this because people only have so much time and they don't want to listen to the whole thing or whatever, unless it's super compelling. But at the same time, it's also like my passion and my favorite thing to do. So it's like I would do casual magic if it made no money and I was just there to talk to my friends. Because not even my friends. I meet a lot of people and I make a lot of friends. Do you remember how we met, Cal?
I'm going to guess the time that we formally met.
Because it's really funny.
Well, we had interacted on Twitter and stuff before, as one does. Kind of. And I believe it was GP Vegas, not GP.
It was
but,
the Vegas post,
Magic
post.
Yeah, Magic Fest Vegas, the first event post COVID.
Yeah,
whatever it was called
COVID
at the time.
And Omicron, when we were like coming out of the cave. Magic.
The first time around, yeah. And I was like just hovering around you.
Yeah, and you were just like hovering all the time. And I was like,
I was just watching.
Yeah. And I was like, I have no idea who you are or what's going on. And I'm like, dude. And I grabbed you. I'm like, either talk to me or sit down or go away, but do not do this weird quasi thing. I'm like,
yep.
I am a very approachable person. So let's just hang out and be actual friends and not this weird quasi nonsense.
And the rest is history.
And it worked out, didn't it? I think so.
Yeah. That was such a weird time for me. I was like, I went into that cave, like unmarried, renting, barely out of college at my first job, came out of cave, like homeowner, married, much better job, suddenly had thousands of followers who cared what I thought about Magic the Gathering, and I had no clue how to interact with anyone. That was a transition time for me. And you really were just like, hey, you can just talk to people. You can just do that. You don't have to just wander around. You can just like say hello to someone. I was like, wow, so true. That was an important lesson you taught me, Shivan. I think that was like a lesson I already knew, but sometimes it's hard to act on it.
Mm-hmm.
But
that is one problem that I've luckily never had, because I am just extroverted. I'm the extrovert's extrovert, right? Like, I need to talk to people. I introduce myself to people all the time. I'm just like in your face. I very much understand that I am not for everyone. I know that there's a lot of people who just find me really, really irritating or really just annoying to deal with, because I'm just won't shut up, or I'm hanging around with famous people all the time or trying to ingratiate myself. And think, I get it. I understand exactly. And it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not wrong in the sense, like, I'm definitely, like, I know who I'm for, you know, like, I know that there's a constituency that I represent. I know that there's a group of people that I speak to directly, and I don't need to be for everyone. And I can just sit here and, like, one of the things that Magic has given me is the ability to just be very happily excited to just be who I am. Because when I worked in the games industry, early on when I was at 1UP, right after college, when I was a game reviewer in games, writing game journalism stuff, a friend of mine pulls me aside and he's like, yo, you're too enthusiastic. Like, you are too...
Hey, you're having too much fun over there.
Literally that. You were having too much fun. You were too enthusiastic. You're too fanboy to be objective and to be like, you know, the kind of cynical edge you needed to be in the game business at that time. And I was like, that sucks. Yeah. But then the thing is, though, it's true. And it's also where I sat and I learned that, like, I can find places where I can just be, you know, the enthusiast and like just thrilled to be here. And I can thrive in that space. Like, why should I sit and try to pretend to be cool when I can just be cool? You know, it's like, loving things is cool, man. Enjoying things is the greatest feeling.
Having fun is could be considered a reason to be alive, Shivam. And you seem to be much better at having fun than many other people are.
Well, I mean, I try.
You try your best. All right. As I anticipated, I got to ask one question of you, Shivam, and we have now been going for almost 45 minutes. So that's usually about where I try to end it. Shivam, I do maybe have one more question for you.
Feel free, ask away if you want. We didn't even talk about CAG stuff.
I know. I'm just going to ask you this. Or whatever. I know. This one's short, and it's kind of about the story you just told about your incidental, not even incidental, I assume very purposeful, trek into becoming a quite wide-scale content creator. If you could give any advice to someone who is heading down the same path as you now, they just got invited to be on a Commander podcast.
Hmm.
They are interested in having their ideas heard by the world, which I assume you were at the time. They're passionate.
I just like
something.
To talk, man.
I know. They're passionate about something. What advice would you give this person? Would it be basically what you just espoused of don't be afraid to have fun and just go crazy, be you?
There are two things. One is a holistic idea and one is a serious bread and butter idea. The holistic idea first is that if you love something and it's overwhelming and it's bubbling out of you at all times and you're like, I want to talk about this thing all the time. Like, let's say you're into gardening and you're like, oh my God, I love gardening. I want to talk about gardening all the time. I want to trade gardening tips with people. I want to talk about getting the foiliest garden tools. I want to talk about making sure what's the best pack one, pick one out of these seeds. You know, like, if you're enthusiastic and love talking about something, it will show. And if you love something, your audience will love it. Right? Like, you loving something, if you are excited and happy, the audience knows and they want to know why you're excited and happy and they want to follow you because they want to be excited and happy. But if you're there and you're just doing this by rote and you're miserable and, or not miserable, just miserable to meh, and you're just there and you're going through the numbers and going through the motions and just doing the thing, they can tell. And they're like, look, man, if you're just doing drudge work, I'm watching you tonight. I don't have to do drudge work. I don't want to follow you down that path. I'm going to go find somebody else who's happier or just enjoying what they're doing. Like, there are streamers that you can tell they're not enjoying this draft format, whatever this draft format is. And you can tell that they're sitting there and they're just, well, I guess I'm going to take another Urborg Uprising. Here we go.
Ooh. Yep. Oh, looks like we're doing this.
Yeah. And it's just like, you want to watch that guy? You want to sit and watch these people for the next 3 hours? Grind through their life? Like, no. But when it's in a format that they're super into and they're like, oh my God, look, I get to do this and I'm going to totally draft the domain deck and it's going to be amazing and it's going to be super cool. Then like their energy gives you energy. And when you're making content, or even like, I learned this because, like, you know, I even watch a lot of preachers and I watch a lot of like charismatic people and a lot of like religious conversations. And I see who of these gurus have good ideas that stick and make themselves into like world changers. And then who of them just kind of come and go. And what it is like, if you've got the passion, if you got the spirit in you and it wants to come pouring out, then find that and do that and stick to that. Don't try to tailor yourself to the audience. I mean, to an extent, yes, you have to pay attention to what they're listening to. Sometimes the thing you are doing is not going to be for like thousands or millions of people. It's going to be for hundreds of people. Understand that and recalibrate yourself to just be like, look, I'm putting myself out there. I'm talking about this thing I love. It will find the people that love it and they will be my die hard core audience. And you can spread that out and make it more general and stuff. Like, the more general you get, the less passion you see in it. The less, the more it becomes work, the more it becomes trying to manipulate the numbers to make them work. And that's when you get like a little bit soulless, a little bit like corporate feeling, polish. And it's like, cool. And I'm not dogging that, dude. You got to eat. That's how you make
sometimes
money.
Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah. And it's like, look, if you're big enough and like, Prof doesn't make videos that are just about showing the facades of his store and talking about fun things. He makes the videos that are going to get him the ability to pay his rent and stuff. And that's reasonable and fair because like that's what you got to do. But like when you're starting out, that shouldn't be your concern. Your concern should be if you want to get to the level where you're caring about what the audience cares about, then you've got to be passionate first. You've got to be somebody that they're willing to listen to about anything, right? Like, there's so many people who are like, man, there are people who listen to me and to Wheeler talk about magic cards all the time. And then they've started listening to my Dragonlance podcast, not because they know Dragonlance at all, but they're like, look, man, I love listening to you talk about things you care about because your voice shows and it seems super exciting. So I will listen to you talk about this thing I don't care about just because it's so cool. Mm-hmm. Now, the more practical bit of advice is, the most important thing you can do is not fetishize tech, not fetishize like, oh, do I have the best video overlay or do I have the best this and that? Don't do that until you need it. But the most important thing you need is your sound quality. If your sound quality is ass, it doesn't matter if you are spouting the words of the Lord on golden plates, nobody will listen, right? Like, you know, you've got to make sure that because this stuff is all primarily an audio format, not just podcasting, even video is an audio format because a lot of people will watch magic content behind their spreadsheets, behind their tabs, their work computer, doing whatever they're doing. They're not paying attention to, they're not like watching the video. They're listening to the video. Right now, YouTube is the largest podcast app by a lot because of the fact that people just use it as a second screen.
Yep. It's just on.
Shove it in your pocket and just listen to it while you're walking. If you sound like you're screaming through tinfoil, you know, in a bathroom, then people are not going to listen to you.
Look, you don't have to be so mean to my blue snowball here, Shiba.
Look, like any mic is going to be a good mic as long as you're willing to.
Sure.
Just don't use your, like, do not use the built-in microphone for your headphones or your webcam. Get a dedicated microphone. Any dedicated microphone, even the cheapest one, will be leaps and bounds better than anything in your, you know, Logitech camera or whatever the hell. So that's the two pieces of advice. One, love what you're talking about. And two, make sure that people can hear you love what you're talking about.
Definitely agree on all of those. Oh, there's one more.
Yes. The thing that Josh Lee Kwai told me the first day I started, when I was asking him and I was doing podcasting with Commander in, and I was asking him advice and stuff. And the first and most important piece of advice after audio is pick a schedule, stick to your schedule, hit your schedule. Don't miss. If you miss, they will not come back.
Yep. Everyone will just be like, oh, what happened to that? Well, oh, well, yep. Never mind.
There's 10,000 other things for me to watch. Bye.
Yep.
If you're going to stream, pick a day and time to stream, announce it, and show up. If you're going to be doing a podcast, pick a day and time to drop your show and show up. If you miss it, that happens, but you got to make sure everybody knows that it's going to be up there in an hour and it wasn't there 4 hours ago. I've had people who come up like, yo, man, your show didn't go up at midnight. I'm like, it went up at 8 a.m. Yeah, but I was driving from Tennessee to Kentucky. And
I was waiting on it.
Your show is what I listened to. And I'm like, you know?
Mess that one up.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, be on time. Make sure people can hear you and talk about things you care about talking about.
Well, Shivam, thank you for talking to me today about the things that you like talking about.
It is from podcaster head right now. I'm thinking about the fact that this audio track, when you go to edit it later, is going to be your track is going to have like a bit of blue in the beginning, a bit of blue at the end, and then a long blank space. And then mine is just going to be a solid.
I'm going to press V on my keyboard. I'm going to press right next to after the end of my intro, and I'm going to go a long drag, and I'm going to right before the outro click.
It's just like going to be
chop all that out.
It's just going to be empty.
Edit done, baby. Shivam, thank you for joining me on this episode of the Herald Torn.
You are more than welcome, my friend.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Herald's Horn. If you liked what you heard, consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you really enjoyed listening, you can support us directly on Patreon. I'll even send you a sticker in the mail. Every little bit helps us make the best podcast we can for you. Check out the link in the podcast description. Herald's Horn is hosted, edited, and produced by me, Cal Jones. The co-hosts are Emma Partlow, Lexi, better known as Black Girl Mage, and Dan, better known as Moderately Anonymous MTG. All of our info also lives in the podcast description. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Herald's Horn and any place else you can find us too. If you want to reach out to me about the podcast, hit up editorial@heraldshorn.com. I'd love to see your email. Thanks again for listening to the Herald's Horn. We're having so much fun creating it. See you in 2 weeks.